handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome everybody to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I am your host, J.L. Covan. It is 3:36 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, January 16th in the year of our Lord, 2022. How are we out there? Good, I hope. Don't really care, but hope you're doing well. And if you're not, that's okay too. Recording this on a Sunday because despite it being Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Esquire's birthday and national holiday tomorrow, I will be, I have to do two other podcasts and legal work tomorrow. Not in the office, not on the clock, but it's really one of those, I guess, would it be a Hobson's choice? I don't know. I think that's when you have, or a Sophie's choice, or a taster's choice if you're into coffee. Whatever choice, let's be pro-choice today. And I'm pro-choice when it comes to making your own choice analogy. But work is, as I've been repeatedly saying, busy. And there's a Thursday night deadline with work. And they just kind of do it, you know, how Heath Ledger just broke a pool cue and threw it down to two people and said, you know, winner gets to work for me. That's how it sometimes feels with work. It's like, enjoy your three-day weekend. Just understand that if you choose not to do any work over this three-day weekend, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you might want to, do self-harm, if not worse. So feel free to do some work this weekend. But if you want to enjoy your three-day weekend, and just know that you might start cutting or poisoning yourself or committing crimes or contemplating ending it all. And that cookie just walked in and decided she needed to shake it off like Taylor Swift right on the desk. She just flapped and bumped the desk with her vigorous shake. So if you heard a shake, that was not a tsunami or an earthquake or my upstairs neighbors who have moved, so like Walter White in season 4 of Breaking Bad, Skyler, I won. It felt so good seeing their moving truck come in and go, never will I have to hear your children running at 6 a.m. and your large body. I'm talking about the woman, okay? I'm trying to be nice, but she was the one with the poundage. Just thudding around, but I think he was also doing stuff. I'm not blaming her entirely. Their whole family didn't understand what it was like to apparently live in an apartment building where, you know, there's somebody underneath you who doesn't want thudding at all times of the day. Anyway, basically this was an incredibly long roundabout way of saying I have a lot of work to do this week, so I figured I'm here alone on a Sunday. Well, not alone, okay? Cookie lives matter. Cookie is here. And so I said, let me do the podcast now. I have not much to say. So good news for everybody. The positivity streak will continue this week, if only because I don't have a lot to say. So that's really, even if the tone of this episode becomes negative, it's going to be a short one, which in and of itself is a positive. So there will be positivity abounding. Now, this is the second to last episode before I hit the road. So I need to remind you guys, I don't need to, but I'm going to. I shouldn't need to. How about that? I shouldn't need to, but every day on social media, I encounter massive quantities of stupid. So no offense to you guys, as I cherish you as fans and as dedicated real fans, but you know, that's not to say three or four of you might not be dumb as fuck, but I appreciate you. I appreciate you, and I respect you, but you might be a short bus stupid motherfucker. So, but everybody else who's not that listening right now, nothing but respect. But to the two or three of you who are just horrific, thank you for listening. Give it a 5-star review. So we got Chicago, January 27th. Big show. Do I need to say that? Big show. So if you're in Chicago, if you have a friend in Chicago, if you know a friend or a family member in Chicago who is a fan of mine, please tell them to get tickets. Get them tickets. We need audience. Oh, I'm not saying that. I don't know how ticket sales are. I know I've gotten a really good response from Chicago. So that's just my way of saying I don't know how desperate I am, but more ticket sales equal more money equal more bookings at improvs across the country, which means coming to your city. So instead of saying to me for that 97th time, what about come stay in Idaho? When are you going to be perform here? You have a lot of fans here. Three. The more audience I sell, especially at chains like the Improvs, the more I can go to other cities. And they have a lot of clubs around the country. So I get a lot of requests for Florida. I get Texas requests. So there's multiple Improvs in those states, just to name two among many of our 50 states. So Chicago's first, then San Jose for all my Northern California people. That's February 2nd. All info and links are on my website. I had another argument this week with somebody over links. It's really true that I really don't believe, like, the person who needs the link, it's an irony. It's a catch 22. It's a something. But the person who needs the link probably isn't coming to your show. Like, if the thing stop, it's like, hi, I'm traveling 800 miles to your city. You've wanted to see me perform for a year and a half. Link? Oh, okay, so you don't really give a shit. You don't actually, like, so I've done 99.999999% of the work. But you, seeing this announcement on an internet-powered device, whether it be your computer or phone or tablet, the only thing stopping you now from coming to see me in Chicago, it's like, I live 2 blocks from the Chicago Improv, but Link? So it's a tough thing because you have to educate people on social media on like what works on social media. And the big thing on social media is as soon as you post an external link on a Facebook or a Twitter, you drastically drop the amount of people who will eventually see that post. So what you're basically banking is, well, if 10,000 people see this tweet, if I don't post a link, and 3,800 people see it, if I do post a link, I'm banking that reaching those 10,000 people, the people who want to see me will go on their device and go, oh, okay, let me go open that web browser, chicagoimprov.com, boom. And the people who that's too much effort for don't really, it's engaging in that is really more of just my, it's really my way of allowing Righteous Prick fans to have less negativity in their life, because instead of waiting and harboring it all week and just draining myself, unleashing, just spraying a negativity load all over the ears of my listeners. Instead, what I do is I sometimes engage with people on social media and just condescend and am rude and dismissive because they're not the ones I care about as much. I would rather the people who listen to me consistently have a more pleasant experience. So, not afraid of alienating strangers on social media. I will be, I think, posting the Ron Reagan clip that I took off the TV just showing from last week, showing that he's not about that life anymore. Not afraid of burning in hell. It's like, oh, that's a more reasonable atheist Ron Reagan Jr. But Chicago, San Jose, flappers in Burbank, all my Southern California people, and I know there's plenty going, but you know, these three shows, the more audience, the mo audience, mo money. allow me to worry about the problems later. Okay, let's just do our part of the equation, which is mo audience, mo money. And then let the righteous girlfriend and cookie deal with the mo problems, which is basically what 2020 and 2021 was. Instead of mo money, mo mental problems was my more full Puff Daddy version. Can we get is there a way we can do maybe we can record a remix about my 2020-2021 experience? Mo money, mo mental problems. Is that a good title for the episode? Probably. And then we have Salt Lake, not Salt Lake, Jordan Landing, which is just outside of Salt Lake City, on February 10th. Then, as always, Billions. And then I'm going to give you an update on the special, folks. Exclusive for you guys, for listening. I hope you're excited. I'm mildly excited and hugely disappointed all at once. It's pretty much the contradiction that I live with at all times. But, like I said, those four shows, I don't know where my career will be in 6 months. I hope thriving and doing well, but it could be over. There's a wide range of possibilities going from thriving and successful to dead. Not me, my career. I will hopefully be alive and as well as possible. But yeah, that's it. I mean, Chicago, San Jose, Burbank. I'm just going to say Salt Lake City because it's just, but if you're in Utah, you can find it. But all four ticket links are on my website. Right. I forgot I did book something else. Waiting for the contract, but I'll be back at City Winery in Boston July 14th and 15th. That's a Thursday and Friday. It'll be three shows in their smaller room. Not afraid of getting demoted, but making potentially more money. I won't be in the big room, but that really doesn't bother me because I kind of just want to spend the weekend in Boston, to be honest. Like, so I know people in Boston. Boston's a great city, and I hate the, and I got a Thursday, Friday. I couldn't get a Friday, Saturday, but Thursday, Friday is pretty good. A lot better than the Monday they gave me in 2021. But that should, I guess if you're a Boston person, maybe pencil in July 14th and 15th. So that'll be fun. So yeah, I guess the career, in the words of Ted Kennedy, the schedule never empties, the dream never dies. I don't know who I'm actually fucking performing for, who my audience is, because I'm in this here. Okay, let's do this, folks. This isn't gonna be negative. Don't worry. I know I just kind of prepped you with like, settle down, strap in. This is gonna be brutal. No. I think I'm in. You know, once again, my eventual memoir, Middleman, which is just a reference to so many things, being a center in basketball, being the middle of every picture in school from kindergarten to 12th grade because I was the tallest, being a feature act, the middle act in comedy for over a decade. And there's so many more ways which, despite standing out physically and metaphorically, I end up stuck in the middle. You know, which is why the trailer will have stuck in the middle the song from, you know, among other things, Reservoir Dogs, when he cuts the ear off of a guy. Anyway, that'll be playing during the trailer. That's in my fantasy of when my memoir becomes a hit hit film. But the middle. What's weird is that I think I occupy this space, both in comedy, like a lot of my fellow comedians who are, you know, have either quit or just plateaued. We all occupied this space where we did enough of our, we started comedy in a totally different world. We're like the last generations of comedians. Like, I started in 2003. There was no YouTube. There was no face, like, if these things existed, they existed in like experimental levels, beta levels only. The things that now dominate our lives basically, for the most part, did not exist. And if they did exist, they certainly weren't omnipresent, dominant parts of American social and entertainment life. So I start comedy in this kind of write, make a tape, send it to clubs, show up to clubs, say hi, watch some sets, try to make friends with people, go to open mics, just keep piecing your act together. And when you're ready, do a festival or submit to something and you hope the best, but it was all, just what's your stand-up? There were no podcasts. There were no, like, none of that. No other. Now, a lot of people will think that's good, but it's harder when you emerge in the old world because your DNA is beginning, your comedy DNA is being formed in this world that's, you don't know is going to disappear in 6 to 9 years, but it will. Whereas somebody who starts 5 years later, they might start with a YouTube channel. And they might start with a, or they might start a podcast when it's new and branch out. Whereas you're in this world, this caveman world of, well, I want to be a stand-up comedian, so it's a good thing I've been working on my stand-up comedy. Wait, what? That's not really the path? Or that's a meaningless path, or that's an arbitrary path. It's no longer the defined career path of a comedian or a stand-up comedian. So that's, you know, that's sort of a tricky thing in terms of like navigating your career that way. And I think in a broader sense, I represent sort of a weird generation, which is like the generation that used to show off knowing trivia and memorizing things. And now that's sort of a waste of brain space. So I'll be talking, and this has happened more and more in my career, but for instance, I was just quoting a Ted Kennedy speech from 1980, well, mock quoting a Ted Kennedy speech from 1980, which they play from time to time during political conventions. And I know there's probably old people on listening or older people listening to this podcast going, I remember that very well, JL. Keep on doing what you're doing. But then there's some 29-year-old listening to this going, who's Ted Kennedy and why is JL weird? It reminds me of the time when Ben Roethlisberger had allegedly raped some women, and it was on the cover of sports pages, but also sort of national news because he was a champion Super Bowl quarterback. And that's the two things this country cares about are champions and Super Bowls. And he was both. And to a lesser extent, we also sometimes care about sexual assault. So he was really hitting all big, big things together. And I remember I did a joke. I was in a Hoboken bar, and this is before I had really honed my comedy condescension to deal with hecklers to now where it's almost a strength of mine. When a joke bombs, you know, great counterpunching is sort of like I have friends who have always said they think I'm hilarious, but they particularly enjoy when a joke of mine doesn't go over well because it's like my way of dealing with a crowd that isn't getting a joke is their favorite thing to see, but it can only be born out of failure. So, you know, but we end up usually everybody enjoying themselves. But I remember this woman, I had said something about, I was making a joke, Ben Roethlisberger. I had said it was in October, Hoboken. It had to have been like, I don't know, 2011, 2010, 2012, somewhere in that range. And I said, you know, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month right now. So all the NFL players are wearing pink to raise awareness about breast cancer. But what would even, and this had a little bit of a Norm Macdonald tone to it, I guess. You know, it'd be even better than wearing pink to raise awareness. Would be having your quarterbacks not rape people with breasts. I think that would even be better for breast health, in my opinion. So I delivered that joke and people laughed, but there was like, you know, your typical early 20s blonde in the back. And she's like, oh, what? Like she gave like, oh, what? And I was like, it's a big story. You don't know what I'm referencing. She's like, no, go on with your football jokes. And I was so mad. I didn't get like mad at her, but I was like, yeah, no, that's on you. It's a big news story. So if you don't know it, that's okay. But you trying to be condescending to me, like flexing your lack of knowledge, like that's my problem, your lack of awareness, happened on one of my album recordings, Keep My Enemies Closer, where I referenced The Godfather, but it was in a much nicer way than that. But the person was kind of like, all right. And I was like, it's a quote from The Godfather. It's a pretty big movie. You might want to. 50th anniversary right now, by the way, of The Godfather, 1972. How old are we? Old. So I feel like I sometimes occupy this weird space of coming from raised in a generation where it was good and impressive to have like lots of different knowledge and a variety of topics at your disposal. Whereas now it kind of feels like, you know, it's like relief pitching in baseball. You know, you used to want to be a starting pitcher. That meant you were great. Now you just want to be some guy who throws 105, like one pitch for seven pitches every other game. And it's like, yes, we will pay him $20 million. He's our specialist out of the bullpen. That's how it feels sometimes. So when I reference, I feel like nobody ever gets all of my stuff. And that's what makes me me. I'm like a snowflake. None are the same. And, you know, my collection of humor and knowledge is just good for me. I would be my best audience. There'd be no better audience member than me to watch me do comedy. So that was long and pointless, but I promise the episode won't go too much longer because I got to walk the Cookie Bear Covan, who is struggling with this. She's just terrified of everything. She takes her piss. She's walked multiple times into signs because she never stops looking behind her because I guess she thinks somebody's going to come and choke her out like in an MMA match or something. But she is just really paranoid outside, and it's gotten worse somehow. So sometimes she walks into signs and lampposts and things, and it's funny and tragic because I'm like, you'd think an animal after giving themselves, you know, NFL-style concussions walking into parking meters would eventually stop looking behind every second because the thud on their head might hurt a lot too. But she is stubbornly devoted to her all-encompassing fear. So that's my dog. Not afraid of always being afraid. So, talk about the special, and then I guess I have a couple of reviews. I just finished The Dead Are Arising by Les Payne, the Malcolm X biography. Very good, very richly written book. So I enjoyed that. Next book up is I Came as a Shadow, which is a story about Mike Pence's closeted lifestyle. No, it's about John Thompson, the recently departed Hall of Fame basketball coach of Georgetown University. So I look forward to that. It made, I think, the New York Times top 100 books last year. So that's good. So that, and then I have my books and my today, because I'm just looking so forward to my journeys across the country. I loaded the first two things I downloaded to my tablet for my cross country Amtrak journeys. Hawkeye on Disney Plus and Raised by Wolves on HBO Max. So those will be the two shows along with some books on my way out to California. Then I have some internal travels in California where I have a third book, and then a book for the way back for my way to Vegas. Headed to go from LA to Vegas to Salt Lake City and then back home. It is a long, winding journey, but I look forward to it. Just peace, reading programs, seeing the country, practicing my craft, and like an old time politician riding the rails. but on the way back, I will download the first season of Gomorrah on HBO Max because I've been waiting to watch that for a while. So I was just feeling positive and already set up my tablet 9 days in advance because I'm a psycho. But I got four books, three shows, and four sketches to write on my travels around the country. So it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. It might not be fun for other people, but I'm looking forward to it. But after that, what did I watch recently? I watched Coda on Apple TV. I liked it a lot. Maybe a little, even though I find whenever I watch any a cappella group or choir practicing in a movie, especially a group of mostly white kids who are really feeling the soul of the music, I want to crawl into my own skin and die. No matter, even if the singing is really good, like a cappella, I'm not talking like Boys to Men or some shit like that. I'm just saying like college a cappella, like it makes me uncomfortable. like preppy kids, like majority white, just feeling it and like, oh, I'm feeling this. It's like, ugh. I can't accurately impersonate it or replicate it because it makes me uncomfortable. So watching that, other than that, just to be clear, Coda is about a deaf family, but they have one daughter who can sing and she can hear. So like it create, you know, it's very, very enjoyable movie. Some good humor. What's her name? Marley Matlin, real hot for, like a 60 something year old. You thought I was going to say deaf. No, wrong. That's on you. That's your hatred. That's your anti-disabled people agenda. But I said, I came to the conclusion that Marley Matlin looks like a smoking hot Molly Shannon. anyway, but movie's good. I enjoyed it. It's not perfect, but it is very enjoyable and very much worth a watch. I'll tell you what's not worth a watch. Encanto, which I watched on Disney Plus. Encanto sucked. Encanto, go for that. No can do. That's what I posted that on that's a Hall & Oates reference, by the way, for all my people who don't know their Hall & Oates, which is maybe most of you. You know, and although I would hope some of the people who got the Teddy Kennedy reference also get the Hall & Oates reference, because then we're really, if you guys are fucking missing on 1980 to 83 references, like if you're only getting one of two, then I really am parsing this too much. Encanto sucked, though. That's my review for that. Trump gave one of the funny, like if anybody here listens to Making Podcasts Great Again or likes my Trump stuff and is interested in both supporting my show and hearing some really, really bonus, like a lot of monthly bonus funny stuff, my reviews of Encanto and The Tragedy of Macbeth, which is on Apple TV, are both done by Trump on this month's Rotten Oranges, which is the movie review show I do as a bonus, as one of the bonuses for Making Podcasts Great Again. But they were exceptional. I do say that with all humility and gratitude. They were exceptional. And Encanto, God, what a waste. I'm sorry. Like, what a waste. That's all I, like, and it, maybe it's racist to compare it to Coco, so I try not to, except for right now. Coco is one of the greatest animated movies of all time. It's in the Pixar Mount Rushmore for me. It's a masterpiece of everything. Animation, script, heart, humor, like amazing. Amazing movie. And so it's kind of, you know, unfair, but to sort of go, oh, Disney's, you know, Pixar did theirs and now Disney's jumping into a Latin, as I said, as Trump, it's a Latinx, what do they call it? Spanx? I'm asking what the term is. What's the term? Is it latex? They identify as latex people, the Spanx, or is Spanx a slur? I don't know. You call them, if you see them walking down the street, you say, oh, look at these Spanx. Is that racist? Okay, so if they want to be called latex, I'll call them latex. Okay, it's the left that's racist. I'll say what they want. I'm very open to saying what they want to say. So the latex people in Encanto, very weak, very bad movie. No, I really just didn't enjoy it at all. It was just a nothing to me. And that takes nothing away from the fact that the animation is beautiful. So it's even worse. It's that movie is like a hot 13-year-old with no personality. folks, I only made it a child because it's a children's movie. Okay? Do you not get that? That's why I made that. That wasn't me talking about my preferences. Okay? That wasn't. I like my women like I like my cinema. Okay? Born in the 70s and bisexual. That was both a reference to cinema with a C, meaning the 1970s cinema, which is a golden age of movie making, and also Kirsten Sinema, a piece of shit bisexual senator, though, disclosure, warning, her piece of shit status has nothing to do with her sexual orientation. I want to make that very clear. Her piece of shit status simply refers to her character, not her identity or her orientation. But she also happens to be bisexual, which was the other reference in my cinema comment about liking my women the way I like my cinema, born in the 70s and bisexual. And to be fully clear, that part's not even true. I just like my women born in the 70s. I think, have I ever been in a relationship with a woman who was not born in the 1970s? Let's hopefully not offend any of them 1980s decade booty calls. Yeah, no, I think every relationship I've had has been with a woman. Yeah, no, I don't know why I'm taking so long to think about that, because, yeah, every woman I've ever been in a relationship with has been born in the 1970s. So the bisexual part isn't even true. But I'm not, you know, just trigger warning. I'm actually not discriminating against. I'm just saying it isn't true. But it's something we could be open to, because we're an inclusive podcast and an inclusive podcaster here. So just want to make sure that none of this gets taken out of context and turned against me. So thank you for listening to this. I am now canceled. But Encanto sucked. The Tragedy of Macbeth was tough because I enjoy Shakespeare. Okay. And as Trump said, I'll give you a preview. Shakespeare, isn't that racist? They have a black Macbeth, and all of a sudden they're saying Shakespeare. If I had David Washington in a movie and I told him to Shakespeare, they'd say, sir, you're racist, sir. You're very racist. That's very racist, sir. How could you do that, sir? But now the radical left, they can put an African-American in a movie and say Shakespeare, and it's okay. It's totally okay. You see what the left does? This is what the left... Okay, that's enough of a preview. But that's the kind of content we're dropping, and by we, I mean me, on the Patreon for Making Podcast Gradient. It's worth trying for a month. You might really, really enjoy it. Anyway, don't feel free not to. We're still working on JL Max Plus Prime. Is that how I forget already what order I said? But anyway, you know what I'm talking about if you're a listener to this podcast. And if this is your first episode listening, go listen to a few back episodes and you'll totally understand 10% more of what I'm talking about. But The Tragedy of Macbeth, yes, it was acting. Yes, it was very artistic. Yes, Apple, for some reason, all their shit is like the highest level of camera quality. But I liked reading Shakespeare in high school because you had the little footnotes that would explain to you what certain words meant. You know, I always liked it when it was a word that you thought you knew what it meant. It was like, take him to the church, and it would be like asterisk. And then you go to the page on the other side, and it'd be like, church means bowel movement. And it's like, what? Shakespeare, how is that? How does church mean bowel movement? Anyway, you're a genius. But we have those Folger editions. Sorry, I already mentioned Taster's Choice earlier, but we have now competing coffee brand references on this week's episode. But yes, the Folger editions that I used in high school. You know, I enjoyed reading it because the language is very dense. Everything is the language is chosen for a reason, and it's been 20 plus years since I opened a Shakespeare play, so. When I'm watching them like mow through the language at like a high conversational speed, I'm like, okay, I think I caught what that sentence meant. And yes, they meant this and they meant this. But it, you know, it was a chance for, you know, 2-time Oscar winner Denzel Washington and 3-time Oscar winner Frances McDormand to like, you know, masturbate their acting chops. And it was good. But it's one of those movies that I really can't be like, it was amazing, because I really, if I were a Shakespeare scholar or somebody who was still regularly reading Shakespeare, if I had just read Macbeth like a year ago or 6 months ago and had really dove into it, I probably would have appreciated it more. But I felt like you almost feel like you're kind of listening to a foreign language in a way that sounds like English. So that's not a critique, but I, you know, there's going to be plenty of people who are like, Jill, you didn't like it? Wow. I thought it was devastatingly brilliant. I thought McDormand and Denzel were towering powerhouses at the height of their skill and craft. And I would go, yeah, it seemed like it was all right, but I'm just going to be honest about my deficiencies as a Shakespearean scholar right now. If I had watched that shit when I was 20, I probably would have really, really enjoyed it, because I would have been coming off like reading 6 Shakespeare plays and studying them. But it's been a while. I watched The Tender Bar today, and I say that because even though it's supposed to be in Long Island, it just felt like Ben Affleck. It felt like a sequel to Good Will Hunting. Like once Good Will, leaves Boston. Then Ben Affleck's character moves to Long Island to move in with his dad, even though they're from Boston, so it wouldn't make sense, and becomes like a good uncle who then watches his nephew go off, and have his own Goodwill Hunting adventure. It was a fine movie. I think some people are really enjoying it and some people aren't, but it was fine. Good enough, I'd say. But right now, I mean, the movie that I enjoyed the most by far, Coda was very enjoyable. Coda was the best movie of this weekend, and I'm 3 or 4 episodes into the new season of Narcos, finally. And I'm working finally on just turning it into a bit. My jokes about black drug dealing shows, black and Latino drug dealing shows, the Emmys are just like, well, that's kind of what they do. Are they really acting? Can you really call it acting when Afro-Americans? I just finished the Malcolm X biography, so I felt like it would be funny to drop in an antiquated reference to black people. Afro-Americans and Hispanic, Latino-ix people, is it really a stretch? But when you show me Bryan Cranston or Jason Bateman, these are some of our comedic white actors, and they're getting deep, as the blacks would say, deep into the drug game. Can I call it a game? Can I call it the game? They're getting into the drug the game, and that's real acting. And even when one of our great underrated, underappreciated actresses like Mary Louise Parker, you know, the Marissa Tomei, when you can't afford Marissa Tomei, when she shows up in Weeds and she's humorously dealing weed, I think we should maybe award that comedy some awards and nominations as well. But no, Snowfall, The Wire, Narcos, I think they should just be happy that we're not throwing them in jail just for looking like drug dealers. So I'm going to work on that bit. But Narcos, love Narcos, but it's definitely, I mean, I'm enjoying it, but by now it's not even a shot at the show, but it was just like an A, like the Columbia episodes were A pluses. And I thought the first season of Mexico was like really surprisingly strong considering the total shift in the show. But now it's like good. It's still very good, so I'm enjoying it. But it's like I'd be lying if I was just like, it's the greatest show, it's as good as ever. But the fucking point is I'm enjoying it. So I'm starting to clean up some of the content, which is good. Instead of being backlogged with 90 things of content, I've cut it down to like 38. But my favorite thing that I watched so far, I guess this year, yeah, I watched it January 1st, is Cruella. I thought that movie was the fucking shit. Like, I'm like really surprised at how, like, I just didn't expect to love that movie, but it was just, it was a real strong work. Everybody involved. It was just a really fucking good, enjoyable movie. Didn't have to check my phone. Wasn't bored. Wasn't just, you know, I had one beef with like the first 10 minutes of the movie, and then it was just fucking an A from that point on. So I guess that's that. Next movie up will be Power of the Like a Dog. I say Power of the Like a Dog because every time I say the word dog, I want to say like a dog, like a filthy dog. Amoroso, we fight like a dog. One of my favorite quotes from Making Podcasts Great Again, when Andrew Cuomo left his dog in Albany, and I said as Trump, he left the dog like a dog. I am trying to do a video either today or tomorrow of my, supporting Novak Djokovic, who, let me just say this right here, as a tennis player, one of my two favorite tennis players of all time, I think he is the greatest tennis player of all time. Nadal's the other one, in case you're wondering. But what a fucking dick. What a fucking asshole. And as a competitor, it kind of makes me like him more because I know he's just going to fucking try to destroy people from here on out, which will make for good tennis watching as he embraces the heel role. But and he has like a very good reputation aside from his like pseudo faith-based, odd, selfish medical health habits. He has like a pretty good reputation among other players as being like a good dude and like a supportive member of the tennis community. So it is very disappointing. And I know this can be just like, it's a vax, the vax. Man, everybody else did the shit. Like, the country has rules and you fucking like lied or like or tried to skirt around them or whatever. Like, Because he did one of two things. He's either lying about testing positive so that he could get a medical exemption, or he tested positive and was completely selfish and reckless in the way he acted while positive with COVID. And neither of those reflects very well at all on him. Or the people who've decided all of a sudden they're fucking huge tennis fans of Novak Djokovic. Like, what's your favorite thing about Novak Djokovic's tennis game? Is it his world-class famous return game? No, it's pretty much that he's telling the left to go fuck themselves when it comes to their vaccines. That's my favorite. My favorite part of tennis is when Novak Djokovic just says, fuck you. That's the kind of tennis. They should be teaching that at your local tennis club. You go in, your wife maybe fucks the tennis instructor, but before that, he says, no vaccines. And I'd be like, well, here's your money, man. I appreciate you and what you're doing in the tennis sport, even though I don't play it. Have fun with my wife. I'm a MAGA cook. So, So I just want, yeah, Novak Djokovic, a huge fan of the way he plays, and I like his fire, and like I said, in many ways, he has a good rep, but like this is a big deal, and for people to be like, oh, so one thing, well, yeah, like we're in a pandemic, and he's demonstrated an insane level of selfishness, which obviously he's an individual athlete, he's not a team sport athlete, but it's just, come on. And even if you're somebody who thinks the pandemic is overblown or this or that, whatever you think, the fact is you're going to a foreign country. They're entitled to pass the laws and regulations that they want. You need to abide by that and not try to fuck over or lie or scam the system. And, you know, so even if you don't agree with me on that, but there's the country is entitled to, during this time, to take reasonable measures. And, you know, it seems like the country, not just the government, but it seems like the citizenry of Australia is pretty firmly supportive of this decision to strip him of his visa and kick him the fuck out. I think it's terrible for the sport. I feel bad for Djokovic. I'm not going to sit here and be like, fuck him, motherfucker. I feel bad because he's chasing history. He's a great player. He's been a great champion in Australia. So, like, Even if it's of his own doing, I can still feel bad for him for doing this. But it is of his own doing. Like, let's not mistake that and be like he is a victim of a self-inflicted wound. So I can feel bad that he's, you know, maybe feels bad, but you know he's still fucked up and needs to pay a price. So anyway, what else was I going to review? I don't know. What was I even talking? Why did I even get into talking? I felt like I had to say something about Djokovic because I'm such a fan of his play. But I don't know. Come see me perform, blah, blah, blah. Did I review anything else? Did I watch anything else? Encanto sucked. We did that. Encanto really sucks. I just feel like I need to say that a few more times. Encanto fucking sucks. And I watched The Tender Bar, which is okay. Power of the Dog is the next movie up. Power of the Dog and finishing Narcos. And then Ozark comes back. You know, those crafty white actors and their drug dealing. God, they're so good at pretending to be bad people. Unlike people of color who just, they do their drug dealing and then they just film it and people act like it's acting. Is that what it is? Do racist Academy voters and Emmy voters, do they think that, is that what happened? They just thought it was like a documentary. They thought The Wire was just about real people. And they were like, oh no, it's good. It's very powerful. But, these are acting awards, not documentary awards. Narcos. Yeah, I didn't, it had subtitles. That's another strike against it. Unless you were a model minority, we will not respect your subtitled shows. Not afraid of singling out Asians for praise. But I do love Squid Game, and I hope that wins some shit. Okay, so I think we're done, right, guys? You're probably all saying, yeah, no, JL, you are fucking done. What the fuck episode was this, dude? Well, the good thing is this will go up on Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Esquire's birthday, guys. So you'll have something to, you just like MLK had a dream of little black boys and little black girls hanging out with little white boys and little white girls. I'm MLK's nightmare. He's like, sometimes they can get... That didn't sound good. No, I haven't watched enough clips yet. I need to... I'll get him. I'll, you know what, guys? I'm going to get a Martin Luther King Jr. impression. It's not too late, right? Do some viral videos as MLK, like ordering fast food. And then people can lip sync it and get more video, more views than me. But you'll have something to listen to on his birthday. You know, when you're cutting up the cake and destroying voting rights, you can say, content of our character. Content of our character. That is, yeah, we're going to hear a lot of that from Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and Ted Cruz and other great people like that on his birthday. We're going to hear about content of the character and how the Democrats, for trying to get more access to voting, are the real racists. Anyway, America, not afraid of going down in flames. We're in an early Hindenburg stage, I think, for this country. So let's all enjoy it. See that? For once, the country got me negative and not my comedy career. Oh, my special. Guys, why didn't you remind me? That's what this all was about. I went on a fucking, what, an 18-minute detour? When all I wanted to do was tell you about my special. So, let's make it quick. The special. I have an offer on the table. Not from a platform, but from somebody who's going to basically act as an agent for it. The terms are onerous, borderline criminal, and I may still take it because, unfortunately, I think I've told you, I haven't spoken too much in public, but I maybe give off a thirsty, desperate vibe, but you know what? I am when it comes to this special. I need this to be seen by as many people as possible, and my goal is to sell it to a platform. And if anybody can help me with that goal, it's worth giving a lot. Now I have to issue a counteroffer because the offer I got was truly, you know, would make, you know, biblical loaning look fucking kind. But it was, I'm going to negotiate hopefully a little bit on it, but basically this is about getting it on a streaming platform. And if it doesn't get on a streaming platform, by that, I also I'm saying HBO, Showtime, Amazon Prime, Netflix, obviously, you know, one of those. If it's not on one of those, then to make money off of it, I'm basically going to need to rely on every fucking person who's a fan of mine buying it or renting it, you know, off of Apple or Amazon or whatever. But it's rough because I'm going to need, like, to turn to make some serious money on it, I'm going to need, like, thousands of people to buy it, which is rough, but I'm just forewarning you. And that's the part that really sucks, because I don't have a lot of faith. Like I have hundreds of thousands of fans or followers. I have thousands of listeners listen to me each week as Trump, and then hundreds of you listen to me as me. And the special is great. That's not the issue. Like, that's why I'm so desperate to, I will give myself a bad deal if it gives this special a better chance, because I believe this special is, not to quote The Matrix, but I believe this special is the one. I believe this special is the thing that I've waited my career for. And I've had a lot of good moments and I've put out a lot of good shit, but this special, this is it. This is it. It's it or it's the finale. And that's not a threat. That's not me being depressed, but that's what it is. This is the thing that if I have a 2% chance, better chance, if I have to give away part of the rights to the, or not part of the rights, but like a lot of the profit to get this on a platform, I believe in it so strongly that it's worth it, because I'm not here. I don't need a payday. I need a career. So I can, let's use raw numbers to make them simple. If the pay was 100 grand and I only get 30 grand out of that 100 grand, but it goes to Showtime or it goes to HBO or it goes to Netflix, well worth it. Easily worth it, because I'm going to be making hundreds of thousands, if not more, touring, having people come to my social media, my YouTube, like the exponential growth that would occur to my body of work would dwarf the 30 grand or whatever the payout could be hypothetically. And that's a purely, that there have been no numbers discussed, but in terms of a percentage, I'm sitting here going, it's not a good deal. But I talked to people close to me, including my pastor. And no, I didn't talk to my pastor about this, but that sounds like something, you know, that sounds like a politician. I've sat down with faith leaders and my family and came to the decision that, yes, I will give away a lot of the money from half blackface, because if it hits, money will not be a problem for me again. That's how much I believe in the special. Yet if it doesn't sell and I'm just left hawking it on iTunes and Amazon Video and Vim, whatever other fucking platforms, then it's probably time to call it quits. It'll be seen by my fans. They will support it. They will buy it. I will thank them, but it won't grow. It won't grow my career. It won't grow my, where I want to go. So it's it. It's the ninth inning. Not in the World Series. Like, this is the ninth inning in the championship series, and I'm trying to get to the World Series. So if I crush this thing, I'm going to win the World Series. And if I hit a double or a single, the game's over. And I can say, well, I made the playoffs. As a comedian, I made the playoffs, and not everybody gets to do that. And I had a good run, and it's, time to hang it up. So that is why I am entertaining seriously making a deal that I don't consider to be a great deal on its face, but it is because if I can increase the chances of a streaming platform buying this, I have to do it, because that's the option. The other option is just, well, okay, it's going to be like everything else I've ever done in comedy, where it makes a little bit of money and that's that. So that's where the special's at. But the good news is, if I cut this deal, it could be ready at least for pre-order. It could be ready for pre-order by like the end of February, early March, which would then allow me to start to tie it into the Billions appearance with my to-be-announced publicist, who will hopefully, work in tandem with wherever the special goes to augment my reach and to get my career out of purgatory. So that's the update on that. Look for Half Blackface this, late winter, early spring, I guess. So that's good news. And besides that, I guess that's it, folks. So please, hope to see you. Please go listen to Making Podcasts Great Again if you don't already. Subscribe to my YouTube channel, posting a lot of new videos. Oh, that was, I think, what got me off on Novak Djokovic, is that I'm going to be posting in the next day or two, I guess, a video of Trump, Mike Lindell, maybe Mike Pence, and Don Jr. just offering their support and solidarity with Novak Djokovic. So that's something to look forward to. So I hope you're subscribed to my YouTube channels. I hope you listen to both podcasts. Stream my albums if you haven't already, to get yourself primed for either live shows, if you're coming to the live shows in Chicago, Burbank, San Jose, or Salt Lake. Give this show 5 stars, right? And so hope to see you at a show. And that's it. I'm rambling now. So thank you for listening. Enjoy your holiday. Enjoy your week. Stay healthy. Stay safe. And I will see you next Tuesday, even though this is going up on a Monday.